I want to grow my business this much and I'm going to recruit partners to make that happen. Is the organization really aligned and investing to be able to execute on that strategy? So I certainly am looking at roles that may or may not have the title that I had before. And that, for me, that's okay. I want to be able to contribute in a certain way to certain levels.
Welcome to SaaS Connect, the SaaS Partnership Podcast, brought to you by the Cloud Software Association. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com.
All right. This is the SaaS Connect podcast. I am your guest host today, Rob Spee, stepping in, and very happy to be here. And I've got a special guest host with me, Lana King. Lana, how you doing?
I am doing great. All right. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, you and me both. We were just chatting and I'm hunkered down in Alpharetta, Georgia. Lana, you are hunkered down in?
Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas. Exactly. All right. So we got a little bit of cross-country action going on. SaaS Connect is obviously hosted by the Cloud Software Association up in Toronto. Shout out to Tamara for inviting us to be hosts here, guest hosts and guests. And thanks to Nir and the entire crowd at the Cloud Software Association for all the work that they do. So that is just fantastic. Lana, we're going to have a fun conversation today and just chatting about a number of different topics. So let's start off with a fun one. You've been on my own podcast, Channel Journeys, a couple of times. And I remember back then you were big into cardio kickboxing.
I am.
And are you still doing that?
I do. So I get up at 5 o'clock. 3 days a week and go up to a local gym here and lead cardio kickboxing and strength training classes. And I've been doing it for 20 years, which is...
Wow. So I don't know if we have any cardio kickboxers in the audience. We'll see. If there are any cardio kickboxers out there, let us make note of that in the chat. Lana, are you seeing this? We've got an international audience here. We've got Edward from Barcelona, Sophie from Paris. Bonjour, Sophie. Ça va? Yeah. This is fantastic. I didn't know we were in it. Oh, and from Lisbon. Both Irish in Lisbon. We've got a great international audience here.
I love it.
You want to polish up your foreign languages here, Lana?
I don't see anyone from Spain or Mexico. Spanish is a...
Oh, well, you got Barcelona. So you got that one covered.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Where is Barcelona? I love it.
So we've got some good stuff here. All right. So you have a pretty interesting and strong channel background, Lana. You led channel strategy and programs at Polycom. Then you own the partner programs at Lenovo. You are the global partner programs and enablement leader at Mitel. Unlike me, I've probably had, I don't know, I think 30 different channel jobs. I must have a short span of attention. People just get tired of me because I've had a lot of different positions. You've actually stayed in positions long enough to get something done and be successful. So that's fantastic. So great career. Now you're actually in the hunt for your next adventure, right?
I am. I took some time off and I am now beginning to look to see what's next for me. And so it's super exciting to see what's going on in the channel right now and having the opportunity to focus on that instead of getting my key responsibilities done.
So a lot of kickboxing while you were taking some time off?
Yeah. And I ended up actually having to have ankle surgery. So I am right now on a scooter. So my kickboxing is limited to just arms these days. So I'm riding around on a scooter for 3 more weeks.
Oh, man. That's not too bad. But it's always takes a long time to recover. Way much longer than we want it to.
It does. So,
yeah. Well, I hope you get better from that really, really soon. Okay. I think when you and I were chatting about what we talk about on this, I thought it was really fun based on the position that you are in, where you've had really fantastic channel positions with different companies, slightly different roles, but always a strong partner program element to it, partner strategy element to it. So I'm really curious, as you've been on the market starting to look around, what are you hearing and what are you seeing from the companies, the SaaS companies that you're talking to who are exploring partnerships? Maybe some have partnerships already and some maybe just starting from scratch.
As I'm looking at different industries, so a lot of what I'm coming across are organizations that are beginning to just develop their partner program or beginning to just get into that. They have a solid base. They're strong in the SMB. And so they're having this need to move up market and they're looking at partners as the opportunity to do that. So that's a lot of what I'm seeing right now.
And do you think that's because you're targeting a specific type of company in your search?
I do. I think it's because I'm targeting a specific type of company. clearly SaaS organizations. And additionally, when I'm seeing open roles out there, as you mentioned, I had been in my role for a while previously. I think organizations are beginning to, when it comes to introducing partners, so I'm seeing two things. One is a focus on introducing partners and expanding their overall channel ecosystem or their go-to-market strategy. Yeah. And the other is, we might dig into this later, I'm seeing a lot of partner experience type opportunities and roles come up.
Before we talk about partner experience, let's talk about partner manager experience. What kind of experience and backgrounds are the companies you're talking with? What are they really looking for today?
Yeah, so what I'm seeing a lot of, so depending on the role, but what the companies need and what they're looking to do as they introduce the channel are they're looking for people that have experience with the overall strategy. They know that they want to grow the ecosystem. They know that they want to get access to more customers. They're seeing partners as a way to, quite frankly, obviously extend their sales force and get access to customers that they don't have the reach to tap into. So the roles and what they're looking for is people that have that experience and the ability to define not only, okay, clearly we know we want to go out and sell and we want to attract some partners, but how do we do that? And so they're looking for people that have that skill set and the ability to look at, okay, what is the overall strategy of the company? And then how do we translate that to effectively recruit and onboard the right type of partners?
Do you think they have a good sense of what they want from partners?
I've talked to several different companies and just even counseled, got given some advice to colleagues in the industry. And that is one of the things, like, number one is like, we want more sales. We want to attract more customers.
Right.
And so really digging down into what do you want from your partners and what does your partner landscape and ecosystem need to look like? And once you identify that, let's say you really are needing post-sale support, having that strength and identifying the right partners. So my guidance to these people, because it varies on organization and what their strategy is, but really to your point, understanding what is the root cause? Why do I want to attract this partner? What kind of partners do we want? And from there, what do we need from them? And what do we have in our organization to A, enable them to be effective, to B, ensure that cross-functionally we're aligned, that we have the right rules of engagement in place to ensure overall success for the business? Because simply wanting a partner because you want to add customers is not a strategy.
It's not a strategy. And that's so funny. Lana, I had a conversation the other day and I was talking about the importance of having that partner strategy. And the answer is, yeah, we have a strategy. We want 20 million in partner originated revenue. And so that's not really a strategy. That's a goal. But what's the strategy behind that? Is that all you're really looking for from partners, or is there more to it?
I think one of the critical things is to continue to drive that, because at an executive perspective, let's say it's a privately held organization or even public, not understanding that it's not just saying that you want a number and then going out and hiring and throwing channel salespeople at it. It's really important for that cross-functional alignment to really get tight and clear and to build step by step. And it unfortunately takes time. It isn't something, and I think that's one of the things that I see a lot of, is organizations expect by the next quarter, once we've hired this many channel salespeople, or we announced a program, expecting revenue to just immediately come in, and it does take time.
So as you're speaking with these companies, are you making an effort to set those expectations? Because you don't want to jump into a new role and then 6 months later, they're saying, Lana, where are the results? Why haven't you
delivered? Absolutely. I had a great discussion with an organization and they're like, what does it look like? How quickly can you go? And I just laid it out. They're like, that's not fast enough. I'm like, I got it. And you can accelerate certain pieces more quickly. Absolutely. But to really get the fruits of your labor, to really expect to see that, these are the steps that do need, in my experience, need to be considered and taken to ensure that you're setting yourself up for success. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be everything at once, but really setting that and getting those foundational components in. How are you going to measure? Understanding the key performance indicators. Do your partners have access to the tools and systems that they need? So it's all of those fun things that are critical to the overall strategy.
So we have SaaS companies of all different sizes, folks listening to this podcast. What's your formula for success? What are those kind of key components that you're thinking about and discussing when you're going in and thinking of joining a new firm?
For me, very specifically to this, one of the critical things is to understand the overall corporate go-to-market strategy.
Yeah.
And what portion of the business is either intended to go through the channel is currently running through the channel? And then what are the critical elements that partners need to do? So something, an exercise that I often do and then get this, as I mentioned, cross-functional buy-in is to really understand within the channel ecosystem, whether you have system integrators, value-added resellers, distribution partners, what are the components of each that you expect will deliver value out to the partner? I'm sorry, to the customer. What do you want them to deliver to the customer? And then what do you expect them to deliver back to you? Are you expecting them to potentially take on some of your post-sale support? Are you expecting to be able to reduce your overall sales force because you're going to accelerate it there? So that's one of the first things that I do is really understand the strategy.
Align to their go-to-market strategy.
Exactly. What elements of the go-to-market strategy is that? Determine within the channel ecosystems who's needed, and then build out the various components critical to deliver that. Whether it's a partner program, if they don't have something specifically, discounts, just the benefits, all of that, all of those components that come with the program.
You mentioned partner experience. So let's get into that as a component of the partner program. How much are you hearing folks talk about that? I talk about it all the time. One of my big priorities is Beyond Trust, but I'm wondering how much are you hearing companies picking up the clues there?
I have many roles that I've looked at and what I'm seeing. So I've seen a couple of different things.
Yeah.
Organizations 100% are increasing the partner experience discussion. And it's actually blended sometimes with partner experience and customer experience. So there's some blending there, which I think is really interesting and likely something we'll continue to see. But beyond that, I'm seeing built into the program role. So I expect you to manage the program and deliver on partner experience. And then I'm also seeing just some standalone partner experience things very uniquely. And the partner experience components are new to organizations, to many organizations within the last 12 months or just introduced. Whereas programs have been around, obviously, for years and years. You have that framework and the structure. This is what we need from you. This is what you'll get from us. But now what I love, just because I love the channel, is now there's really a care about to this is to the relationship. And you're an extension of our sales force. And how the partner treats the customer impacts the overall customer experience. So we need to measure and look at the partner experience.
There's been a lot of emphasis on customer experience over the years. And now I think we're starting to see that translate. And partners are a customer, right? They're one of your customers. And so I'm really thrilled to see a much more emphasis on that. I think we've always said you've got to be easy to work with. And that's true. That's great. But what does partner experience really mean? And how do you measure it? How do you measure and know that you're doing a good job?
In terms of the overall partner experience, it is significant and it's very robust. It's like the term enablement. It can mean so many different things.
Yeah.
And it does and will need to tie back to the overall organization and just the strategy. One of the critical things to determine and really understand how you can make an impact in the partner experience is to do a partner journey map, very similar to a customer journey map. Mm. How does the partner from the recruitment perspective to onboarding for every single step in that partner journey, all the way to, okay, your partner's been onboarded in year over year. So across each of those different steps of the partner journey, having an ability to understand and define that experience. What I've observed is given it's so complex, the first foundational piece is let's first understand what can and can't be measured. So I've worked in organizations where I'm like, how many partners click through? What are we measuring? It's like, we don't have access to that, or it's very difficult for us to get. So again, within the partner experience, introducing partner experience elements, whether it is a partner advisory council, whether it's network NPS surveys, whether it's transactional surveys, understanding and really having a baseline and ensuring that measurements can be made. Similar to any kind of customer experience, you'll want to be able to measure the effectiveness of anything that you put out there. I think that's really critical is to ensure that across the organization, if you're looking to introduce elements of partner experience, you can't do it all at once, which many of us can't.
Yeah.
Determine what the most pieces in your organization. Is it my partner portal? I want to increase the accessibility. Is it the knowledge base? We want to ensure that our knowledge base is really effective and we're getting great feedback. And so we have closed loop process to ensure both our partners and customers have access, great information. Getting that baseline and ensuring you have an ability to measure is critical.
I like the concept of a partner journey. We did our company kickoff this year in Orlando. So we brought the entire company down to Orlando And the last day, we had a little bit of a leadership session afterwards, and they brought in the Disney, what is it called? The Disney University, I think. They were talking about how they drive and their roadmap for exceptional customer experience. They talked about the touch points. They pay special attention to all the different touch points that a Disney customer has on the entire journey, even before you get to the park, and obviously at the park and after the park. And so that got me thinking about all the different partner touch points. And
that's right.
Your partner portal is one of them. They're touch points with your sales reps, with your channel marketers. There are so many different touch points. And any one of those can create an exceptional experience or an exceptionally bad experience, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. It is defining a partner journey is actually a great exercise because we think about just, okay, it's a partner portal. And to your point, Rob, it's so much more than that. It's all of these different touch points that are ever so critical.
That you have to pay attention to. Promoter score is an interesting one too. We've just started doing partner net promoter scores to see what they think of us at BeyondTrust.
Yes.
And we've only done 2 quarters so far, but we had massively different NPS scores. So we're waiting to see the 3rd quarter. Where does this land? The 2nd quarter, though, was the same timing as our big partner and customer event. So we're wondering, did we just get a big lift? Because that was such a good experience. Did we get a big lift from that?
One of the things that I think is powerful to do that. So a net promoter score is great. We need those measurements to really understand. But I think balancing that with additional transactional type surveys so that you're really measuring and assessing the partner experience across the various touch points, whether it's just one opportunity, a closed lost opportunity, or whatever those transactions are. Somebody comes in and takes a training. You want to get a score from that. And having the ability to aggregate that input is really important because you can have a strategic decision that was made. Something happens in the market and you happen to send your survey out and you get horrible results that may or may not really reflect how your relationship with the partner specifically. So having more than one big survey that goes out, I think is really important, and to survey partners along the different paths within that journey.
That's such a good point. And you're exposing that we have a lot more to do, but we've made progress on it because all we had was like this one big, massive annual partner survey, which is almost meaningless. You've got to have regular surveys, smaller surveys, micro surveys. And I think you're right. We're only doing one touch point. There's so many others that we should be gauging and could do surveying on. So that's a great tip.
Yeah. And it doesn't always have to be giant. I will say one of the tough things, and we all very likely feel this, is everyone gets a little bit of survey fatigue. So another really important thing, yes, it's important to get feedback across the various touch points. We also need to make it easy.
Yeah.
And just in the design of the surveys and putting that together, really asking yourself, what am I going to do with this information? If I get a response and I kind of want to know, but I can't take action on it, maybe don't include that answer until you can take action on it, and then leave open space for what else do you have to share. Then you can get something. But that was really, the last survey that I put together working globally with all of the leaders, people wanted to ask and add a lot of questions. And we really had to push back and say, what are you going to do with this?
Great point. So you see, we have a question in here. Do you have any medium-term go-to-market plans to share? Is the first half of the question. And then any recommended tech stack to support that or to support the whole partner initiative? So I'm not exactly sure what they mean, medium-term go-to-market plans. What are your thoughts there?
I'm not either, but given the follow-up, and perhaps, Sophie, you can clarify for us, if you're just entering and building that relationship with partners, the recommended tech stack, certainly from a partner relationship management perspective, having a partner portal is critical. It doesn't have to be an entire partner. You may not need to have deal registration. You may not need to have every single thing that's available for partners, but having a way for partners to log in, have their own portal where they can access information, whether it's sales, marketing, technical information, is very critical. And if you have a program, certainly partner program dashboard is quite important to ensure the partners are engaged.
And then there's obviously a lot of other elements. You ran in partner enablement as well. What kind of tech stack did you have for partner enablement?
Yeah, we had a learning management system, obviously, and that gave partners not only the ability to, at an individual level, get certifications, demonstrate specific competencies, put badges out on social media, and give us the ability to assess within the program how many individuals were certified to be able to sell us.
On the program itself, getting back to kind of customer experience and partner experience, are there any new elements that you've added to partner programs that SaaS companies should be thinking about, but maybe they're not in the classic tiered, metallic tiered partner program that was the rubber stamp before?
Yeah, I will tell you, I haven't added anything new, but been in discussions around it. One of the things that's really, that's interesting is organizations today, the value that they get from partners is very different. So some of the discussions, and this is probably a totally different topic, is it still a metal level program? Is it still progression that is linear, or are there values that we can determine? So as a partner, if my both measured partner experience and customer experience scores are a certain thing, that means something in the program and I can recognize the partner for that. It's a strategic partner. It's an executive partner. So instead of using nomenclature that really I'm a platinum partner, I'm the best of the best, for example, I'm a strategic partner, which may mean I'm good in one specific area of the business, but maybe there's another type of partner, an executive level partner that's good at another.
Getting back to tech stack, one of the things that we're doing is because we are making the transition to being a SaaS company. We were more of a perpetual on-prem security company. Now we are really SaaS in the cloud and pushing all of our new sales to the SaaS model. So that landing the deal is not nearly as important as the really helping to implement it, getting that use of the product itself. And we're leaning on the channel and the partners to do that. We are working on how do we expose the utilization. We use Gainsight. So how do we use Gainsight and expose that data to the partners so they can see what is the utilization and is there in there doing their delivery? What metrics do they need to know that they're being successful in driving adoption of the product that's going to lead to expansion in the account?
Absolutely. And taking it a next step further, even beyond that initial expansion, just from a customer lifecycle management perspective, having the ability to measure partners. And this is something that we've done to measure partners on their effectiveness there. How are you retaining your customers and building that in to the program as well? Because so often historically, it has been about sales as opposed to retaining and upsell and just that overall, to your point, expansion.
All right. Interesting question just came in. How do you typically think about benchmarking to understand the overall program's health when stepping into a new company? That's an interesting one.
That is an interesting one. One of the critical things, certainly for me, and Rob, let me know what you think, is I'm looking at going into a new organization, is looking to see where the program, first and foremost, where the channel sits within the organization. And one of the critical questions that I ask is, what is the investment in the channel? One person says, oh, 90% of our sales go through the channel and we have this. And another person says 50. And that it's a little bit of a red flag. And again, Matt, to the question that you're asking, it does depend, I think, on the overall organization. If it really is it's a sales engine and it is all about sales. It's pretty critical, very critical, as opposed to having the ability to, Rob, as you mentioned, assess and measure the customer throughout that overall life cycle. Is it an expand approach? So within the program, what do you have? Another critical piece, and in terms of just benchmarking in a program's health, is really understanding what measurements do you have in place? Can you measure by partner their impact on a sale down to the customer level? Do you have a level of metrics and details to be able to really assess all of the various components that you may want to include in a partner program? Having discussions with people, we want to include a program. I'm like, help me understand how you measure your partner and how do you? And so really digging into that and ensuring that it's there, because tying the partner to the customer, back, Rob, to the point that you made, when it comes to expansion or it comes to overall retention, that's critical to ensure that you can have those two married up and attached.
Yeah. And I think there are several types of benchmarking that you can do. You can do industry benchmarking. And there's good information out there. You read a lot of posts from Jay McBain at Canalys. He is always putting out benchmarks. TSIA has a lot of great SaaS company, you know, everything in the cloud service model metrics that you can use, right? We use benchmarks for our own experience of kind of what we expect. But I do think in the layer model, land, expand, what is it? Land, adopt, expand,
renew. Land, adopt, expand, renew. That's right.
Yeah. There are metrics there too of what you should expect. I know when I came to Beyond Trust, we were great at the land. but the entire program had been built to land. There was no program elements for the adoption and expansion. So that's really what I focused on initially, was driving that up and getting the ecosystem and program in place.
Absolutely. 100%. That's evolving. And I think it's many organizations. It's one of the reasons they're looking at partner experience. It is that latter end of the layer, if you will, that is really, really critical. The competition is changing. And so it really is important just to retain as many customers as possible. And certainly costs a lot less money to retain a customer, but I don't know. It may not these days. I would love to see some studies, and I should go look and do some research on that, because just customer retention, given how easy it is sometimes just to light, depending on the technology, just to shift and transfer from one, whether it's provider to another, is the investment in retaining customers is certainly something I'm seeing many organizations do right now.
That's a really good point. And that's part of the challenge, because in the SaaS model, it is easier to shift. And I think you have to, what we've done is built into our models ways to make it stickier through integrations with technology alliance partners. So the more we get our product entrenched and integrated with other alliance partners, that makes it even more sticky and harder to take it out.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. So I am seeing a couple of other questions.
Yes. Are you willing to share the LMS that you use?
I'm willing to share. It's not a commercial. I will say I've had a number of different learning management systems. Very specifically, the recent was an organization named Absorb. And you know what? At the end of the day, there are things in an LMS system that are frustrating, things that are easy, things that are more difficult. And I will sound like a broken record. The solution that you pick depends on your organization strategy and your critical needs. Do you need to be able to measure down to the individual level? Do you need badging? Do you need it to be out, open to the public? Do you need it to be behind? Do you need actually for it to be behind your firewall? So all of those things are critical. And there are some great organizations out there. That's who we happen to use.
And you can also, a lot of the partner portal providers have kind of basic level LMS systems too, that entry level, early stage, that you can use that as well. That's another option. Let's see here. Edward, I'm at a SaaS company at a very early stage. What would I ask my channel partners to target, their current clients or new business? I have an opinion on that one. What do you think, Lana?
One of the reasons I think, depending on your solution, one of the reasons that you're recruiting partners is to tap into their relationships and their base. So I would say their existing clients.
Yeah, me too. I think that's always the easier. That's the first thing you go after, right? In any new partnership, to start looking at that account mapping. Where do we have overlap of existing customers? That's the easiest one to start getting conversations going. Then where do we have overlap of my prospects and your customers, or your prospects and my customers? Go down that route. And then last is going after totally net new business, because that's usually the toughest to get. Get some wins first on that existing customer base.
That's right.
Let's see. Any other indicators used to judge if a program needs a turnaround? That's something else that we encounter a lot, Lana. You step into a company and they've got an existing program, but it needs a refresh or a complete turnaround.
So a couple of things. One thing that I think is true with partners is they actually like predictability. They want a level of predictability. And at the same time, you have a new strategy. You have, hey, we really want to accelerate, similar, Rob, to what you guys are doing. We want to accelerate our SaaS business. So you do need to make tweaks to the program. One of the lack of incremental partner recruitment might be a key indicator that you need a different program. Certainly, as you look at your overall margin, if you're seeing margin degradation and perhaps you are giving more away than you're getting back, you might want a program refresh. If partners just are no longer engaging, if you, for example, have competencies built into your program, but you're not seeing partners come in and engage and stay on top of their competencies, maybe their certifications last 2 years, those are some very clear indicators that you might need a refresh of your program, driven by the partner community and kind of their interaction with it. Clearly, strategic changes in your business are going to drive that. Strategic changes in the market may drive that. You might or may need to be different. So those are some of the key things that I would recommend looking at. Rob, how about you?
In our case, it was a change in business model. If you're not a born in the cloud company, you're an older company that started on-prem with a traditional perpetual model, if that business model has now changed to SaaS, you absolutely need a revamp of your program. You're not going to have the channel built and enabled to do what you need to do as a SaaS company.
That's right. And with that transition, it is not a, hey, we built the program, where are they? It's not necessarily if you build it, they will come. There is a change management component to that as well, as you consider revamping a program, introducing it, and helping partners understand what the new value proposition is for them. Yeah. Why should they do this? And it's really all of those elements are really critical to be sensitive to and thoughtful about, which goes back to the partner experience and having a trusted advisory council and partners that you can get that feedback from.
Yeah, absolutely. The partner advisory council, PAC or PAB, whatever you want to call it, they played a big role for us in helping us guide and steer as we revamp our program. But we were careful. We didn't want to alienate our existing channel. So we didn't come out like, hey, this is a totally new program. We kept making smaller iterations so that we could hold on to the partners that really are still very powerful and strong for us as we added new elements and new partnerships.
I called it the evolution of our program. And,
yes.
You know, on one hand, again, I think that's really, it's important. And in some cases, you may need a complete refresh. You may need to do that. I'm a little bit more of an evolution kind of person just because the existing partner base are so critical.
There's a lot of good conversation going on in the chat, probably even more in depth, Lana, than we can address. A lot of good stuff happening in there. Let me see here. This isn't a channel marketing conversation. There was a question about live events. I know at our company, we are doing a lot more live events, a lot more. And customers really seem to be, and partners seem to be really ready. Partners, even more than customers, really wanting to engage in live events. We're seeing customers going much more to the big shows because there they can go and see everybody. So we're having really a lot of success from a customer perspective at the big shows, but we're doing more smaller events with our partners and some really local events with their customers.
I love that. At my prior organization, very, very similar. And you're right, partners are, come on, we are all eager to get back out there and be face-to-face. So absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to speak to Steve's question really quick as we talk about surveying and incenting partners.
Yeah.
If you had the budget, 100%, that was one of the biggest challenges, getting the response. And we all have survey fatigue, but having some sort of incentive to get partners to respond.
Yes.
And the other critical piece is to consider who within the organization you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many different touch points. Is it the salesperson? Is it the technical support person? Is it the implementation manager? Is it the business owner? So I think those are really important. But if you have the budget to provide an incentive for a response, absolutely. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not going to change my answer if somebody gives me something to respond. I'm still going to be candid.
Yeah, and we use that too. And it's amazing. Even a $10, $20 Starbucks card, though, for the cost of coffee, you barely get one for that. But yeah, it can have a big impact on response rates.
Absolutely.
I agree. It's definitely worthwhile. All right. So what else we got? Anything else you want to touch on there? Talked about swag. Here's one. Oh, Sunir was throwing this out to the question to the audience. Channel work better in the licensed software channel. What makes subscriptions harder for channel partners? Have you addressed these challenges? That's an interesting question, Sunir. Any thoughts on that one, Lara?
You know, from a program perspective, how we address that challenge was really to, if you think about a premise solution, just the overall revenue that they're going to get, progression through the program, it's much easier for them to progress. So we in the program kind of did a blend and introduced program points to neutralize the overall measurement in the program. So the partners that are shifting towards more subscription sales, the upfront revenue may not be as significant, but we give them the credit to normalize that in the program. The other thing there that's really critical is just, again, education, ensuring and really having clarity around that value proposition and having the ability to have a calculator to show this is what it looks like over the lifetime of a customer. And this is what the value to you looks like from a dollar perspective if you renew that customer. So to have not only elements of the program that give them that support so they can continue to do business with you, but also they see the value to them in terms of dollars over the life cycle.
Yeah, I think with the SaaS model, it's even more important than ever that you fully understand the partner's business model.
Yeah.
Right? Because if their business model is more transaction oriented, then they want to make sure that they can build up a very strong recurring revenue model, right? So what is the recurring margin that they're going to get on your product, not just for the transaction, but more importantly, for the renewals that are coming in. But a lot of partners are shifting their business models to be more service oriented because they recognize the margins are getting smaller and smaller. And so they need the high margins from the service side.
That's exactly right.
So you've got to make sure you align with that.
Yeah. Matt, it is a dicey question. Matt has asked, how do you go about establishing channel alignment, channel management perspective when your business has been direct? Critical component there is establishing a really tight rules of engagement and getting alignment across the board. It is not just rules of engagement done in a vacuum from the channel team. It is across the board, whether it's a chief revenue officer, whoever that is really having a stake in that. And having that clear rules of engagement will help certainly support the relationship. There's going to be perhaps in a deal, a winner and a loser per se, but having very clear guidelines and that rules of engagement really tightly defined will, even if somebody may not like the answer, they know it as opposed to after the fact.
Yeah, I agree totally. Rules of engagement are so important. I had a conversation recently with Bart Finelli, who was my chief revenue officer at my prior company. And now he's really going back to what he had done before, which is focusing on sales enablement. Mm-hmm. And he really opened my eyes to something because you can take a more of a top-down approach and say, you've got to have executive alignment. You got to have your sales VP and your sales RVPs totally aligned to your partner strategy. But where it can all fall apart is at the sales rep level. If they don't buy into it, then you're out of luck. So Bart's point was, it all starts with baseline training. So your baseline sales methodology, whatever it is, spin selling, force management, whatever, you have got to have your partner motion interwoven into the baseline, right? Because that's what the sales reps are going to listen to. You can then coach them to the baseline, and everyone, their managers will coach them to the baseline. If you don't have the word partner in your baseline sales methodology, you're just fighting a losing battle because you're just always going to be butting heads with sales reps.
I love that.
Yeah, it was an eye-opener for me. So we're working on that right now. Lana, kind of getting back to the job hunt topic, I went out to LinkedIn and I just did a search last night and it was pretty rushed. I was watching television while I did it. We're catching up on Yellowstone. But what I saw for high-tech partner jobs, I saw 275 channel jobs, 93 alliance roles. That seemed like a really small number to me. And again, it was a very quick search that I did, but what are you seeing out there in the marketplace? Does it feel like, because I really feel like the market has shifted over the last year and it's a much tighter market, I think, today. Is that what you're seeing?
It is. I am seeing that. So clearly, I'm seeing a lot of channel sales roles, specifically channel sales and even sales leaders. I'm seeing a lot of that. There are the roles that I'm seeing related to programs, channel marketing, partner experience. There are fewer, and even organizations that I'm talking to, they are beginning to tighten that up.
Based on that, what's your approach as you're looking at it? Obviously, you're higher level, you're at the top of the chain. Are you seeing fewer top level jobs as well?
I am seeing fewer top level jobs. So there's the short answer. I was having a conversation with a colleague who was a channel chief, and across organizations, many organizations, whether they have a channel chief or not, a lot don't. They just have a sales leader and channel reports up to that. But there is a channel chief. There is a program leader. There is so they're single. You're seeing a lot fewer of that and just dispersing the work, if you will, to maximize the breadth of the team.
Any advice for, there may be some other folks out listening to this who are between gigs, and any advice for them on their job hunt today?
Yeah. So certainly one of the things that I've done and what's critical for me is understanding, given I want to be in the channel, understanding the organization's investment and commitment to the channel. And that's really important just in terms of longevity and investment and knowing that the role that you may be looking at, how it's going to be perceived across the organization. The other thing certainly is, and again, this is for me, it is less about a title and more about the ability to contribute. Do I have a seat at the table? Am I having the conversation? Am I impacting and engaged in defining the strategy? Do we have the investment we need to execute against the strategy? Going back to our very early point, Rob, that you made, I want to grow my business this much and I'm going to recruit partners to make that happen. Is the organization really aligned and investing to be able to execute on that strategy. So I certainly am looking at roles that may or may not have the title that I had before. And that, for me, that's okay. I want to be able to contribute in a certain way at a certain level. So that's, for me, the most important. And anybody else out there looking for a job, it is as much about you defining that organization that you want to work with and for as it is them interviewing you.
Yeah. And Lenny, your advice about really investigating how do they understand channels and partnerships? Do they understand what they're really trying to accomplish? Do they have realistic goals? Is there board ELT alignment to that? I think that's so important, whether it's your entry-level channel job or channel chief, you want to know that. Otherwise, it's going to be a painful experience.
That's exactly right. And you know what? There are painful experiences in every organization. There just are. It is called work, but identifying where we want that, those pain points. Yeah. Is it an everyday battle with trying to get something done? Or is it this thing happened in the market? We're dealing with this competitive event. So that would be, to your question, that would be my guidance and counsel again, wherever you are in that organization.
Yeah. Who's that guy that does the Tough Jobs show? Mike Rowe?
I don't know.
Yeah. There's
I know what you're talking about. I don't know his name, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
But his Tough Jobs, they're mostly like cleaning out sewers.
Dirty jobs.
Dirty jobs. That's it.
Dirty jobs.
Yeah. We need to have him interview a channel pro on dirty jobs. It's a tough
that's
job
exactly
in the trenches. Thank you, Helen. Dirty jobs. All right. Great. Well, this has been a great conversation, and I love the interaction that we've had with folks that are listening. That's made it a lot of fun. Any last bit of advice? Let's say any advice for the SaaS companies, the folks that are on the other side, doing the hiring and thinking about how they expand their channel.
Yeah, goes back to really getting clear on what you need. It is not just, I want this because I think this thing, the partners channel, they did this for this other organization. Your business is unique. Your business is very specific. So having clarity in why you want to enter into the relationship, what you expect to get out of it, what you're willing to put into it. And then really getting clear and defining, okay, what does that look like? What is the strategy? And then once we've implemented that, if we did this, to your earlier point, we want this many sales, will it yield that? So that would be my advice, really getting clear. It's more than just, we want to introduce a new route to market. I want to add value-added resellers. It's really getting tight. What is the value add for your organization? The partners will bring, what will you give to them? And then what will they extend to the customer?
Yeah, that's great advice. I love that. And folks like Lana, you can help bring clarity.
Bring clarity
to this dirty job. All right, awesome. Lana, that's fantastic. Thank you, everyone. Thank you to the Cloud Software Association for inviting us to this. We really enjoyed it. Thanks, Sunir. Thanks, Tamira. Thank you all who came and listened. So
we love it. Thank you. Thank you, Rob.
Good luck on your search.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, everyone.
If you like this and want more great insights on software partnerships, you've got to rate, like, and subscribe. And join us at thecloudsoftwareassociation.com. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com. We'll see you on the next episode.